Mr. Ryan is the portfolio manager with William O'Neill and Company. And a student of Mr. O'Neill's stock selection methods. In winning the U.S. Investing Championships in 1985, 86, and 1987, Mr. Ryan swept the field with an astounding three-year net gain of 1,379%. In a minute, we're going to find out how David Ryan accomplished that feat and how he goes about selecting the stocks he buys. So you may want to have a pad and pencil handy for taking notes.
Mid Valley, it's time for Ribbon Radio Capsule 2 Mutations. You're listening to KLFM.org in beautiful Split, Croatia.
But first, David and I were talking about how he got started in the business on the way to the studio this morning, and it is a fascinating story.
Back when I was about 13 years old, my dad brought home that other business newspaper on a daily basis. And I was going through it one night, and I found a $1 stock. And I asked my dad, I said, look, if I run in my room, go in my drawer, and find a dollar, can we buy this stock tomorrow? And he said, no, it doesn't really work that way. That's not how you investigate the market. That's not how you pick a stock. What you do is you have to really do some research, find a company that's growing and doing something a little bit different than other companies. So a few days later, he brought home that same paper and we found an article about a company that was turning itself around. It's called Lord's Foods. It was traded on the American at the time. And what they produced was candy. So it was perfect. At that time, I was 13, and that's just about all I was doing, is eating a lot of candy. So we ended up buying 10 shares of that stock. And when I go into a drugstore or into a supermarket, I either had to buy a bit of honey or a chunky candy bar. So the company would make more money, and the stock would go way up. It didn't really work that way, that we got into the 74 bear market and the stock went from 10 to 4, and 2 or 3 years later it came back. And I ended up breaking even on the stock, but that's how I started, how I started really getting fascinated with the stock market. And then I started reading books. I started going to seminars. I went to a few seminars that Bill O'Neill gave. And anything I could get my hands on about the stock market, I devoured. And I got into the point where, I think at about 16 or 17, I had a trial subscription to Daily Graph. And I started using that product and just kept on studying the market as I went through high school and as I went through college. finally, when I graduated from UCLA, I decided, I said, hey, if I'm so interested in the market and I know the product that William O'Neill and company puts out, why don't I work for them? So I just, I ran right up the front stairs of the company. I went to the receptionist and I said, who can I talk to about a part-time job, an internship, anything? All I want to learn is how William O'Neill picks stocks, how he makes so much money in the market. I started out on a part-time basis. He decided to hire me. I was in the door and I had access to information and I was on my way to really studying and seeing how O'Neill picks stocks. So I was really in just a perfect surrounding, a perfect setting, and I just really took advantage of it and just started studying and bringing material home and reading more and more and more until I started really doing a lot better in stocks. I don't think you really need too much. I would say you could probably start with maybe $500, $1,000. You can start small, and then if you're working, you can keep on contributing to your portfolio of stocks, and eventually just start building it up. You can do the same with an IRA. Start with, I guess, you can make it as small a contribution to your IRA as possible, and start investing in the market that way. But it's amazing how well you can do if you start compounding your money, if you start getting some very nice returns each year, that small amount of money can really build itself into a very substantial amount. So yeah, you can start small, but try never to really pull money out of that account to buy a car or something like that. Try to leave it alone and try to live and pay your bills from your income, from other sources. Right, too many people, I think, get into the stock market with the attitude is that I'm going to make a killing this year. I'm going to make so much money that it's going to happen very, very quickly. But it's very hard to get very substantial returns in the market. It's much better to take a slower, consistent approach. Maybe set a goal of 25% a year. See if you can. Many people are looking at it short term, not really looking long term, setting sort of long term goals and believing that they're buying a piece of this company that's going to grow for the next 5 or 10 years. It's what can I get in the next quarter? How much can I make in the next 6 months? They sort of have to change their thinking. And I think Bill O'Neill has said a number of times where he's made his biggest money is when he's taken a position in a stock and held it for 4 or 5 years. Well, the method I use is the same that William O'Neill used, in that we're looking for growth companies that have a new product, something that's doing something different. And the way, I'll go back, the way he came up with the method of selecting stocks is that he did a study of the greatest winning stocks of the last 30 years. And look at these companies right before they made major moves, before their stocks went from $25 a share to $150 a share. It sort of isolated all the characteristics these companies had before they made those moves. And isolated them and brought them down into this canceling characteristic. The companies you looked at were stocks like Syntex, Dome Petroleum, Fleetwood, McDonald's, companies that have been very, very successful. And these canceling characteristics are 6 or 7 points that are the most important that you should be looking at when you're investing in. Yeah, the reason why we picked the name Can Slim is because it's an easy acronym to remember if you're going through looking for things to look for in a stock that you might buy. Before I get to the C, lots of times I like to start with the annual earnings. Because when you're looking at annual earnings, you're looking for a consistent company. Somebody who over the last 5 years has made money in a good economy. Because the reason why we take a look at a 5-year period of time, 5-year growth record. And that 5-year growth record has got to be up at least 25%. So the company's grown 25% in the last 5 years. The reason why we take 5 years is because in a normal economic cycle, you have about 2.5 years of a good economy, maybe a year and a half of a recession. So if a company continues to grow during a slow period, then you know you've got a company that's got a good product or a good service. So a growth rate of at least 25% for the last 5 years. Then to make sure that growth rate is continuing, then you look to the current earnings to see enhancement. Is very good. When I'm buying stocks, I'm looking for increases of even greater than 25. The stronger, the better. If I can find a company that has earnings increases for the past 3 or 4 quarters up 50, 75, 100%, that's even a stronger conviction. It gives me stronger feeling for the company that they're doing really a good job. Then after the current earnings, then I go down to N, which stands for new. Something new that the company is doing. Either a new product, a new service, and new can also stand for new highs. First going to a product, going back to 1981, I bought a video recorder. And I was one of the first people that I knew that had a video recorder. And I read somewhere in a magazine that video recorders were going to outsell TVs by about 2 to 1 in the coming years. So I said, well, I have to find a company that sells video recorders, either sells them or makes them. Now, I looked at Sony, and Sony was too big of a company. I looked at RCA, and I think they made video recorders, but video recorder sales were not going to have that big of an impact on their bottom line because they were such a gigantic company. So I found a company on the East Coast, which I had never even heard of. It was called Wards. They recently changed their name to Circuit City. They sold electronic products. They sold video recorders and a lot of other things. The stock had the canceling characteristics I was looking for. It had a new product, a new concept, something that was really starting to get hot in the market. And I picked up that stock, and I think since the early 80s, the stock has increased by about 10 times.
Mid-Valley, it's time for Ribbon Radio Capsule 2, Mutations. You're listening to KLFM.org, Ribbon Split Religion.
The longer the new high, the better. It's an all-time new high. It's the strongest situation I've ever been in. The most difficult thing about buying stocks at new highs for people is that in America, it seems like we've been trained that the concept of investing in the stock market is to buy low, sell high. And everything, and in real estate, buy low, sell high. But I kind of turned it around and I look at stocks right as they're going into new high ground. I buy high, but I sell even higher. One way you can look at it is if a stock's going to make a move from $25 a share to over $100 a share, it's got to be making a new high every eighth of a point on the way up. What you want to do is try to find it as it's first going into that first new high. Another advantage about buying stocks at new highs is that there aren't any people ahead of you who have bought at higher prices. There's no sellers above you. When a stock goes into a new high, everybody's happy because everybody has a profit. It's not like you bought at 25 and there's somebody who bought at 30 about 6 months ago who is just waiting for that stock price to get back to 30 so they could sell out and break even. Everybody's happy, everybody's making money, so there's a lot less resistance for the stock to up in price. So I never buy at new lows, and I'll probably never sell exactly at new highs. I sort of get the middle 50% of a stock's move. As it goes into new highs, and then as it starts down from its old highs, well, that's where I sell out. But that's a point that we'll get to a little bit later. I think when you try to pick a bottom, you try to pick a top, I think it's just guesswork. We found that when we did the study of the greatest winners, that the greatest winning stocks usually had, at the beginning of their moves, about 5 million shares outstanding. They were smaller, medium-sized growth companies. Now, lately, as new issues have come out into the market, new companies have gone public, they've been coming out with a lot more shares outstanding. They already issued 20 million shares or so. So I would take that characteristic or those parameters of 5 million and look for companies that have shares outstanding under 30 million shares. Today's market, those are the companies that are the smaller, medium-sized growth companies. When you start getting into companies that have 100 million shares, 200 million shares outstanding, they're usually big, mature companies. And to move that stock 1 point takes a lot of money, a lot of power, a lot of institutions buying that stock. And it takes a lot more power than it does a company that only has 2 or 3 or 4 million shares outstanding. So look for companies that have a smaller capitalization, smaller shares outstanding. One other thing in the S, under shares, is also look at how many shares your stock trades in a day. Look at the average daily volume. And in Investors Daily, we have a figure that shows you the percentage increase or decrease in the shares traded in a day versus the previous 5 or 6 weeks. So you can see if the demand has picked up for your company or if it's dropped off. When a stock is rising in price, you really want to see that stock increase its volume. Especially when the stock is going into new high ground, you want the demand to really pick up and the increase in volume to be at least 50% over its average. When you're looking at a leading stock, a good way to find it is by looking in Investors Daily. For every stock in our paper, we've got a relative strength figure. And all that relative strength figure does is compare how the price of your company is performing versus every other company in the market. It's from 1 to 99, 99 being the strongest. The majority of companies that I'm buying have a relative strength of at least 80. Most of the companies I'm looking at are outperforming just about every stock in the market, and they have relative strengths in the 90s, 99, 98, 97. a lot of people come up with the argument of, well, the stock's already been performing very, very strongly over the past 6 months. It can't get any stronger. Well, you have to remember that this is a figure, it's a relative figure of how that company is performing versus the other companies in the market. So just because it has a relative strength of 99 doesn't mean the stock can't go higher. A good example that I've got is, I was on Financial News Network back in last trading day of December 1986. I came on the show and I had two stocks that I was presenting going over the companies. One was Microsoft, it had a relative strength of 99. One was Xerox Corporation, had a relative strength I think in the 40s or 50s. The very next year, in 1987, Microsoft tripled in price. Xerox Corporation, I think, moved down or continued sideways. Really didn't make any price progress. So you can see that just because Microsoft had a relative strength of 99 didn't prohibit it from tripling in price the very next year. Also, when you're looking at a leading stock, you want to make sure that you're in a leading group, that the company you own is in a very strong group. When Microsoft was moving, it was in the top-rated, top-ranked groups that we follow. And in Investors Daily, there are about 200 industry groups that we follow. You want to do a majority of your buying in the top 50, the top 25% of all groups. When a stock makes a move, a very strong move, it usually occurs when it's one of the hottest groups in the market. So make sure you've got a leading stock and that leading stock is in one of the strongest groups. Institutions make up about 80% of the volume in today's market. They've got a lot of money, a lot of buying power. And they're the ones that really power a stock higher. So So when you're buying a stock, you have to make sure it has some institutional sponsorship. At least 1% or 2% of the stock is owned by mutual funds. Lots of times when I buy stocks and they're just beginning their moves, they have very, very little sponsorship because not too many people follow them or they don't know about the smaller growth companies. As the stock goes higher, more and more institutions buy it. The stock moves higher, higher, and higher. By the time I get to the point where I'm just about to sell a stock, the stock has sponsorship of about 25-30%. Once you get over 30%, you probably have a little bit too much sponsorship. And that, and these institutions then can be a source of supply, knocking the stock down if they start selling. So institutional sponsorship is good. But it's the amount that you have to keep in mind. And in daily graphs, I think we've got a figure for every single stock. We show how much of that stock is owned by institutions. So it's a good source, a good place to look for. The last point in Canned Slim is the general market. M stands for market. What is the market doing? Are you in a bull market? Or are you in a bear market? I use a lot of different things to help me in calling the market. A majority of that comes from how my individual stocks are doing. If I've got 4 or 5 stocks, and they're all starting to move down, starting to break points of where I'm starting, where I should be selling them. It gives me a very good clue of that the market is not performing very well. And the stocks that I'm buying, the characteristics of stocks that I've described are of companies that are leaders in the market. And if they start performing poorly, then you know you're getting into a very tough market environment. That's my biggest hook. Two other things I look at, I analyze the daily Dow. How the Dow is advancing and on what kind of volume. I look to see if it's above its 200-day moving average. I use a few momentum indicators that I keep myself, very, very simple type of momentum indicators. But I combine all these different factors. Aim to give me a very good idea of which way the market is going. But most of it, again, stems from what are my stocks doing? Are they going up or are they going down? Ideally, if you can find a company that has about 5 million shares or maybe a little bit less, that's the best situation. You can go as high as 30 million shares, but once you start getting into 40, 50, 100 million shares, it's just too much of stock. If a company doesn't have any institutional sponsorship, then either these institutions have looked at it and they see that there's nothing worth buying here, or the company is just too small or just not worth purchasing. So some institutional sponsorship gives you some conviction. Graphs, I think, is something that's very, very important, something that investors should use in analyzing a stock. Going over these characteristics of what we just talked about, I've had a number of people call me and said, well, you know, I've got CanSlim down, I know what to look for. And they've got an idea, they know what companies meet these criteria.
Mid Valley, it's time for Ribbon Radio Capsule 2. Mutations.
You're listening to KLFM.org in beautiful Split, Croatia.
But they don't know how to time their purchase. And timing is probably at least 50% of the equation. So I use daily graphs, I use Investors Daily to help me out with the exact timing of when I should be buying this company. So I look to graphs, a one-year graph. If you can use a combination, a one-year graph and maybe a five-year graph, that's the best situation. You shouldn't be scared of using graphs, using charts. Because what graphs are they reflect the actual decisions of investors. There are no opinions contained in charts because they show you exactly the price movement that stock has made. And that movement is made up of individuals' decisions. On if they should buy or sell that stock. the investment decisions of investors are influenced by fear. Am I going to lose money? Or greed, I want to make a lot of money. And these human emotions that these investors have, they rarely change. They're pretty constant. These patterns or these emotions almost show up right in the graphs themselves, in the daily graphs. If you can analyze these patterns, then you can get a good feeling for which way a stock is going to go. If you combine some of the patterns we've found that have proven successful with the canceling characteristics, then you have the most powerful combination. A few patterns that we found have been the most powerful have been a cup and handle formation. Also, there are other things like flat bases. It's just a stock moving sideways. So if you can analyze these, know what to look for, and you combine it with the canceling characteristics, it can really help you out in the timing of the purchase of your security.
And that's going to do it for us this week here on the program. Mid-Valley Mutations, bringing you Ribbon Radio Capsule 2. A bit of a sequel to a program that we actually did 100 episodes ago, where we played all tapes, cassette tapes, tape recordings, the audio that you are hearing right now, coming from my voice, is run through a micro cassette tape before you are hearing it. And that's the kind of stuff that we're doing today here on the program, because we're having fun while we do it, and we enjoy that kind of thing. Stuff that you heard in that last batch of songs there. Chris and Cozy, Five Paw Flipper. Oh gosh, I don't even know how to pronounce that artist. Check the show notes for that one. A little bit of Tomiki's Cup, Black Magic Cyborg, and we closed with Unwound here. Vern giving even more of his answer to the masses. Vern has now passed on, like so many people that we care so much about, and it feels weird to mention that in the run of other things that I have to mention that have been going on lately, because there's a lot happening on the show. In fact, we just wrapped up The Adventures of Marcus Little, which was really cool and really excellent, and it sucks that it kind of corresponds with this weird end of the summer where I feel like I need to celebrate all these people who have passed, because, now Marcus has passed himself. So, yeah, there's more to that story. We're going to drop some tidbits from Marcus Little here and there throughout, but I hope you enjoyed the program. If you missed some of it somehow, check out MarcusLittleAdventures.com. Has all the back episodes and different ways that you can hear and download the program. Yeah, we're going to put some little bits here and there in the podcast feed as time goes on. And then, eventually, you can own Marcus Little yourself. But that is not today, because we haven't prepared that part yet. Anyway, we're having a lot of fun here, just kind of enjoying the direction that the show is headed. It's September. Can you believe it? This year. Oh, man. What a year. So, with that in mind, we're going to kind of let things play out. We're going to close this show, move on to other projects, and not dwell on all of this weirdness. It's kind of nice to put a few things behind us. Kind of nice to enter into a new phase of thinking. Fall is always that time of year where I have a lot on my mind as I think ahead and consider what's just happened. And, hopefully I'll be able to hash it all out here on the radio. What can I say? You guys are wonderful, you guys are beautiful. And without you, there would be no program.
Mid Valley.
Be seeing you.
Mutations.
Buy wisely. Buy for flavor. Buy Del Monte. Del Monte, the brand you trust for flavor in so many good foods. Time now for Rocky Jordan, brought to you by Del Monte Foods, the brand preferred by more women than any other line of canned fruits and vegetables in the world. Not far from the Mosque Sultan Hassan in Cairo stands the Cafe Tambourine, run by Rocky Jordan. The Cafe Tambourine, crowded with forgotten men, alive with the babble of many languages. For this is Cairo, where modern adventure and intrigue unfold against the backdrop of antiquity. Del Monte presents Rocky Jordan and this week's story, A Lady from Istanbul.
It was just like any other busy evening in the Tambourine. Outside of the tourists, the customers were about the same, too, including a towering hulk of a dock worker with the incredible name of Abdul Omalia, who was paying for every three and taking the fourth on the house. But it was another customer who held my interest. She was seated at a corner table holding conversation with a tall, pencil-mustache man. She was American, and she was lovely, with soft green eyes shadowed by heavy lashes to match her jet-black hair. I was trying to decide what she reminded me of. St. Louis, maybe, or New Orleans.
A most beautiful creature, eh, Rocky?
Huh? Oh, yes, she is, Abdul.
But not for you, Effendi, as you can see.
Oh, you get me wrong. The girl's upset about something. A little too upset.
A lover's quarrel. What else? Come, forget her and join me for a drink.
Not this time, Abdul, thanks. Have another on the house.
Bartender.
Yeah?
You heard the Mr. Jordan.
I was sure there was more than anger in her tense face and eyes. What I saw there was a strange uncertainty and terror.
Leave me. Get up from there.
No, my arm, Henri, you're hurting me.
It takes pain to teach a lesson such as this.
All right, that's enough, mister. Break it up.
This is no affair of yours.
In my cafe it is. Now beat it.
So, with you it takes the knife, eh?
Why, you... Now pick up that knife and get out of here.
Rest assured, you have not seen the last of me. You will more than regret this. Both of you.
All right, folks, settle down. It happens every day. Show's over. Back to your tables.
Mr. Jordan.
You all right, lady?
Yes, but I'm so dreadfully sorry.
Oh, you needn't be. Here, sit down. Mind if I join you?
Please do. I'm Marlowe Granger.
It's a pleasure. I don't recall meeting the guy with the mustache either.
Oh, his name is Paget. Henri Paget.
Not a very nice playmate.
He's only a shipboard acquaintance. We met aboard the Doreen B, coming down from Istanbul.
Well, then you're new to Cairo.
Our boat docked here just this evening. I'm at Shepherd's now. We were sightseeing and came in here. I didn't know what he was like, Mr. Jordan.
Okay, Marlowe, let's forget him then, huh?
I would like nothing better. Thank you for what you did.
Forget it. I don't like to see pretty girls slapped around, especially Americans.
Americans?
St. Louis, my hometown. Yours?
Why, my home? London. Yes, that's it. I'm from London.
Aren't you sure?
Yes. Yes, of course. London.
Well, it doesn't make any difference.
Mr. Jordan.
Some folks call me Rocky.
Rocky, all these people. I must go back to my hotel. Would you
mind?
What
about Paget? Sure he isn't waiting around?
I don't know. It's possible.
Supposing I come along, huh? Just in case.
Yes, Rocky, please do.
You're listening to KLFM.org in beautiful Split, Croatia.
I took her to Shepherd's with no more trouble. Before I left her, we found ourselves making a date for tomorrow. I picked her up the next afternoon. We hired a horse-drawn buggy called a Gahari. We're off on a deluxe tour of Cairo. Strange oriental quarters, bustling bazaars, the Nile Drive. The threat of Henri Paget seemed to be forgotten. He wasn't following us, but somebody else was. A blonde, bareheaded man in a white suit. He showed up at the pyramids, the Sphinx, and the museum. Then again on a street corner where a native comedian was doing some tricks. I maneuvered her in the crowd, so she was looking at the man in the white suit point blank. Marlowe, do you know that man, the one in the white suit?
What'd you say, Rocky?
Nothing. Skip it. There was no sign of recognition, so I let it pass. As for Marlowe, she seemed to have just found life, laughing, full of interest at each new discovery. I don't know. Maybe she noticed the same change in me. Well, it went on that way. At 3 o'clock in the morning, we stood at the top of the fabulous Abdin Palace, viewing ancient and modern Cairo at a glance. But it could have been any place. San Francisco's Telegraph Hill or the Tribune Tower in Chicago. Because all I could see was Marlowe in my arms.
I never dreamed Cairo was like this, Rocky.
Marlowe, that fellow down there with the native flute.
Yes, I've been listening.
He's been playing it for years, ever since I came to Cairo. It used to sound like a clothesline in a high wind. You know how it sounds now?
Rocky, please. It's been a wonderful night. Let's not spoil it now.
Sounds like all the music that was ever written and ever could be written. In this city, Cairo. I've seen it at night and I've seen it in the daytime. But it never looked like this. Nothing ever looked like this.
Rocky, please, I have no right.
Nothing was ever like this.
Oh, darling. Oh, my darling.
Hey, what is this? Is it that bad?
No, it isn't that.
You had me worried. Come on, lady. We've made a discovery. I know your name, and I want to know more.
No.
How you got here and how we met.
Rocky, I...
Marlowe, what is wrong?
The music stopped. Please, take me back to my hotel.
Without saying any more, we turned and went down the winding steps of the palace tower to where our Gahari was waiting. And as we rode slowly back across the city, I saw that she was again the tense, bewildered girl of the night before. I tried desperately to get at what happened and why, but it was no good. And we didn't say any more until we reached Shepherd's around 4 in the morning and stopped at the door to a room. I still didn't have it straight. Well, I guess I figured wrong again.
Rocky, I wish you could understand.
So do I, Marlo.
Goodbye, Rocky.
Uh-uh, Marlo. Just good night. Marlo's eyes darted from his face to mine and back again, and all the terror was there now, because the man she'd called Emil was big and fat and evil and smiling with a devil's head.
A most tender and touching scene, most tender indeed. Gorge.
Alwa, Satan Bey.
See that Mr. Jordan does not remember it.
I whirled as a huge dumb giant in a robe and fez appeared from behind. In another second, I was locked in his arms like a baby in a cradle. Only this guy wasn't gentle. I tried to make a fight of it, but I couldn't move. He just held on with his huge arm around my neck and squeezed and squeezed and squeezed. Till Marlo's lovely face and the grinning devil's head faded into a haze. And I never knew when the arms gave way and I dropped to the floor.
Mr. Jordan? Mr. Jordan, wake up. Come, come, my good man. Open your eyes.
All at once, out of the blackness, there was bright light in my eyes. I realized it was from the early morning sun pouring in an open window.
Mr. Jordan, will you wake up?
A man with too much pomade on his hair was bending over, shaking me. I was on a bed in a small room.
Mr. Jordan.
But I wasn't waking up fast enough.
I say, are you all right now? You just can't stay here, you know.
I'll make it. Who are you?
I'm the room clerk. I was instructed to arouse you.
Wait a minute. Isn't this Shepherd's?
Oh, dear, no. You're in the Caliph House. Small but in good taste, sir.
What am I doing here?
A man brought you in during the night for safekeeping, shall we say. He paid the bill, but it's now checking out time.
What man? What did he look like?
Oh, rather tall with a mustache. he was sober.
His name was Paquette.
Well, at least you remember that much.
Let me get that phone.
A moment, my good man. There's a payphone in the lobby.
He had it his way, and I called Shepherd's for Marlo Granger. She'd checked out 2 hours before, leaving no forwarding address, nothing. What I couldn't figure out was the link between Paquette, Satan, and Gourgay. So I tried a piazza for police headquarters.
Speaking.
Sam, it's Rocky.
Do not shout, Jordan. I can hear you.
Listen, I want you to help me locate a girl.
Locate? Is that a function of the police department?
Look, Sam, you know I don't call you unless it's important.
Continue, please. What is her name?
Marlo Granger.
Marlo? Indeed, Jordan. What do you know of this girl?
Well, she arrived in Cairo 2 days ago on the Doreen B from Istanbul. Green eyes, black hair. Registered at Shepherd's till this morning.
And what is your interest in her, Jordan?
Strictly personal, Sam, but you gotta find her. She's in trouble. Look, if you ever did anything
so
for me...
So you wish to find this girl?
That's right.
Well, so do we. We had best discuss this in person.
What are you driving at?
A man died in a Cairo hospital just an hour ago. His name was Henri Paquette.
Paquette?
We found him in a room at the Orient Hotel, badly wounded. Just before he died, he told us who shot him.
Sam, don't tell me.
Yes, Jordan. He was shot by the girl you and I would like to find, Marlo Granger.
Del Monte Foods is presenting tonight's adventure with Rocky Jordan. Let's drop in on the Robinson family for a little while. It's just about dinner time, and Ed is due back from the golf course any minute. In fact, here he is now.
Hi, gorgeous.
Well, hi yourself. How was the golf game?
Okay. Really worked up an appetite. Say, what's on the menu tonight? Smells good.
We're having pot roast. Mother's special recipe you like so well, remember?
Do I? Oh, there's nothing like it. Only just remember the catsup. My favorite kind with the special flavor.
Never fear, my love. You mean Del Monte catsup. I always keep a bottle of Del Monte catsup handy. It has such marvelous flavor.
Yes, friends, Del Monte catsup has the flavor. Marvelous tomato flavor. Why? Because Del Monte is a special blend of piquant spices, sparkling vinegar, and beautiful big red tomatoes. Tomatoes ripened right in the field and rushed direct to the cannery. None of that rich tomato goodness is lost. It's all right there in Del Monte catsup. Real tomato flavor at its best. Look for Del Monte catsup at your grocer's. You'll be delighted how little it costs. Just try Del Monte catsup. Along with Mrs. Robinson, you'll be saying...
Del Monte ketchup has such marvelous flavor. I wouldn't be without it.
Now we return you to Cairo and tonight's adventure with Rocky Jordan, the lady from Istanbul.
I didn't ask Marlo Granger to come into my life, but there she was, and she was everything I'd ever wanted. Getting her out wasn't so easy. Not even now, when I knew from Henri Paget's deathbed statement that she shot him. I couldn't believe it. The memory of the tenderness Marlo and I had known a few hours before told me it wasn't so. I wanted to find her, and I didn't. I went back to the tambourine, and Sam was there waiting with questions that went on and on. When he was gone, I left the crowded cafe and went up the balcony steps to my quarters over the tambourine. I stood there alone for a long time, looking out the window into the sun-baked street, wondering about Marlowe and thinking how this was always the way it happened to me. The same old bitterness was back with me again, and so was the man in the white suit I saw casually standing on the corner below, watching the tambourine. Well, this was my chance to collar him, only just then a knock came.
Rocky.
Marlo.
Rocky, help me.
Marlo,
please,
what happened? Where have you been?
You're all I remember, Rocky.
They're looking for you, Marlo. Whatever it's about, you've got to tell me.
Help me.
Before I could stop her, she'd slumped to the floor. I closed the door, got to the window, and pulled down the blinds. As I did, I noticed the man in the white suit was gone. I lifted Marlo then and placed her on a couch. Her purse slid to the floor, and as I picked it up, the heavy contents confirmed my worst fears. Inside, I found an 8-shot Webley Fosbury English automatic, recently fired. I got the gun out of sight, then did what I could for Marlo. With the help of some cold water and smelling salts, I brought her around, and I had to make her talk to me.
I don't know, Rocky. I don't know.
You've got to, Marlo. After the guy you called Emil showed up at Shepherd's, and the big fellow laid me out, what happened?
I remember only that... But Emil kept speaking to me about Henri Paget over and over again.
Where did you go?
The next I remember, I was standing across from Henri in a hotel room. I think I heard pistol shots and Henri slumped at my feet. That's all, Rocky.
But why should you blank out?
I don't know.
There's so much more, Marlo. Who is Emil?
Emil Satan. I saw him first several weeks ago in Istanbul.
And what else? How did you meet him?
I only remember that he was talking to me. Telling me my name, saying I lived in London. He promised to take me there after this trip to Cairo.
You came along to Cairo because he told you to?
I had no money, and he said he'd take me home. It was kind of him, and I... Rocky, you must believe me.
I'm trying to, Marlo, I'm trying.
Rocky, I don't know who I am or what I've done. I don't know anything except that the noise of those shots seemed to bring you back in front of me. I had to see you. I had to see you no matter what.
I think I'm glad you came. Wait here.
Where are you going?
To the police.
No.
Don't worry. They won't learn you're here. Just stay put. Don't even answer the door. I'll have my bartender keep watch.
Rocky.
Yes?
Why do you do this for me? It might ruin you. You know I've killed a man.
I'm not sure you killed a man.
But the police are after me. They'll be after you. Why? Why do you do this for me?
Marlo, if all this drives you to me, the least I can do is to find out what made you do it.
Rocky, I don't know what's happened. There's so much I don't know. I don't care now. I found you and you're my life. Now and forever.
So, Jordan, in spite of what we know about this Marlo Granger, you still wish to find her?
More than ever, Sam.
At the moment, her whereabouts is not known, at least by the police.
Sam, I'm going to ask you a favor. You've got police influence.
Be careful that you do not overstep yourself, Jordan.
All I'm asking is that you wire London, missing persons. Find out if a girl answering Marlo's description is a recent amnesia victim.
London? Amnesia? It seems that you know much more of the lady than when I talked to you last.
How about it, Sam? You can get an answer quicker than I can.
Tell me, Jordan, where are you hiding this girl?
Sam, listen to me.
I am listening.
I've never asked you yet to step out of uniform or do anything because of whatever regard you have for me.
It has been truly spoken. be friends in social life, but as strangers in all else.
Okay, then I'm begging you. I'm saying, please, get me an answer from London before you make me turn her in.
Very well, Jordan.
Thanks.
But mark you this, Jordan. You will turn Marlowe Granger over to me when I ask for her.
Sure, Sam. It's a promise. My next step to get an answer was the Doreen B, which turned out to be a slow freighter docked at Bulak that carried a few passengers. It was being unloaded. None of the crew was aboard, so I followed one of the loading trucks till it pulled up at a big woolen import warehouse. A visit to the manager's office there gave me a little of what I wanted to know.
What's it about, mister?
That stuff from the Doreen B. You mind telling me where it's from?
A shipment from the Certain Forget firm, London. Why?
The Doreen B, their boat?
It could be. Why?
I'm anxious to see one of them on business. You know where Satan's staying in Cairo?
He didn't say. Hey, you read where some dame plugged Paget?
Yeah, yeah. Will you be seeing Satan again?
Unfortunately. He gives me the quivers to look at. He'll be here at 6 o'clock to pick up his dough.
So will I. So that was something. But Marlowe herself was more important. The confusion, the uncertainty, the trying to remember. From there, I paid a visit to Hassan Bey, a Cairo physician who explained about the different kinds of amnesia. Now a mind already sickened might possibly be made to react against its will by powerful suggestion. And with that, I went back to the tambourine, and when I got there, I learned the promise I'd made to Sam was one I couldn't keep. The tambourine was in a turmoil. I ran back and up the balcony steps, scrambled over Chris, who was picking himself up from the landing. The door to my room was smashed open, and I knew before I was inside that Marlowe was gone. I was back to Chris and helping him up fast.
Oh, come on. Oh, take it easy, Rocky. Oh, you told me not to let a man in. This wasn't a man. He was 10 men all rolled into one. I'm sorry, Rocky.
The thought of Marlowe again in the hands of Emil Satan drove me back to that warehouse fast. He had a business date there at 6, and I wanted to be waiting when he got there. I made it 15 minutes before the hour.
Bad luck, mister. Satan's already here and gone.
Gone, but the date was for 6.
He showed up early.
Why?
Look, I don't argue with a guy with a puss like that. Anyhow, I told Mr. Satan you were looking for him.
You told him?
Wasn't that what you wanted?
Oh, thanks, pal. It took only a few minutes more to reach the docks and find out that the Doreen B had lifted anchor a half hour before, headed for the Mediterranean. There wasn't time to argue with Sabaya now. No time for anything but to keep moving. Some fast scouting around took me to my drinking friend Abdul Omalia there on the docks with some other workers.
Jordan Effendi, what brings you to the banks of the Nile?
I need your help, Abdul. I need it bad.
Then you have it, Jordan. It is an honor to repay you for 1,000 favors.
All right, then listen. There's a boat sailing for the Mumadia Canal in Alexandria with a full crew aboard, but it's got to be stopped.
Is that all that concerns you?
Be sure what you're doing, Abdul. We need plenty of men. I don't promise what happens with the police or anybody.
Oh, you hear him, men? Who comes with us?
All right, let's go.
We come. The days of piracy are gone, Effendi Jordan. But tonight we live.
And not long before dark, Abdul Amalia, his motley crew, and I were on a launch pulling out into the Nile, armed with guns, knives, and gaffing hooks. About an hour and a half after sunset, we picked up the wake of the Doreen B. And in no time at all, we were alongside and piling over the railing onto its deck. It was all over, topside, that quick. And while our men held the crew, Abdul and I slammed through the upper cabins. No luck there, so we went below. And at the end of a dim passageway, we found the right door.
Get off this boat, Jordan, while you can.
We're going back to Cairo, Satan.
Rocky, no.
Stay back, Marlowe. Gorge will deal with these foolhardy intruders. At once, Gorge. You, I kill now.
Leave the big one to me, Jordan. At last, I met a worthy adversary.
The two came together like two elephants at play. They went down with Abdul slamming the giant's head against the floor. It could last only so long, and my eyes were on aim of Satan.
Rocky, he's reaching for his gun.
Satan's hand dove into his pocket, and his gun came out, but he was too slow and fumbling. I twisted the gun out of his hand and let him have it across the face, and I wasn't gentle.
Enough, Jordan.
I am done with the big one, Jordan.
Keep back, Abdul. I'll handle this one. But do I...
Jordan, enough, I tell you.
It's not enough. What have you done to Marlowe? What have you done to her?
She came of her free will.
Free will? You knew she was suffering from amnesia when you found her. Where, in Istanbul?
It was Istanbul. I don't know how she got there.
But you knew of her sickness. You forced her against her will, making her kill for you.
And what can you do now? Emil Paget is dead. I'm rid of a wily partner whom I hated.
You'd use a beautiful woman for that.
Beautiful women were Paget's only incursion. That made it easy.
Yeah. You had only to instill hatred for Paget in Marlowe's sickened mind, provide her with a weapon, and suggest murder over and over till it paid off.
And she will pay, Jordan, not I.
You're paying, Satan. You're paying for me. I dropped my gun and I was in with my fist, taking out everything that had piled up inside me these past 2 days. I kept pounding him until Abdul finally dragged me off and took Anal Satan away. Then Marlowe and I were standing there in each other's arms.
Oh, Rocky, tell me everything's over. Tell me.
Yes, Angel, yes. Nothing more is going to happen to you.
Darling. Darling. I will be all right. Tell me again.
It's all over. Everything's going to be all right. For both of us.
In just a moment, Rocky Jordan returns to conclude tonight's story. Say, if you ladies want to add extra flavor to everyday dishes, try cooking with Del Monte tomato sauce. You'll find Del Monte has a rich, spicy flavor that's never been matched. In fact, Del Monte is the original tomato sauce. For a whole generation, women have trusted and preferred it to all other cooking sauces. For instance, Mrs. F.W. Porter of San Francisco, California said,
I started using Del Monte tomato sauce when we first came to California about 20 years ago. I'm a graduate of the National School of Domestic Arts and Sciences, and good cooking has always been a hobby with me. And in any dish calling for tomato flavor, I just reach for Del Monte tomato sauce. I know it'll give me just the flavor I want.
Thank you, Mrs. Porter. And friends, it's true. Of the millions of women who prefer Del Monte tomato sauce, many have been using it ever since they first learned to cook. Yes, American housewives have bought more cans of Del Monte tomato sauce than any other brand. Remember, for matchless flavor that gives a lift to everyday dishes, buy the original tomato sauce, Del Monte. Back now to Rocky Jordan.
You're listening to KLFM.org in beautiful Split, Croatia.
It was all over, almost. When we all got back to Cairo and police headquarters, Abdul Omalia turned out to be a good witness. Marlowe was booked on involuntary manslaughter, and then the charge dropped, and she was put in my custody. I made arrangements for her to be taken to the hospital for treatment. Emil Satan was held for first-degree murder. Well, that was the time when I should have held Marlowe in my arms like any movie ending. But instead, that was the time the guy in the white suit walked in.
Mr. Jordan?
Yeah?
My name is John Dawson.
Yeah, I've seen you before.
Yes, I've been following you and Marlowe for 2 days now. Mr. Jordan, I get the impression that you're quite fond of her.
That's right. So what?
If you don't mind, I'd like to tell you a little story.
Well?
Not so long ago, two people very much in love were touring the continent of Europe. In Marseille, there was an accident.
Go on.
Shortly afterwards, one of these two people disappeared. The other tried to follow. The trail led from Marseille to Rome, to Athens, to Istanbul, then to Cairo.
What are you getting at?
The person who left, Mr. Jordan, is the one you know as Marlowe Granger.
So?
What you don't know is that her real name is Marlowe Dawson. She's my wife.
Your wife?
We were married in Reading, Pennsylvania, 1943. I have the certificate in my...
Skip it. Well, what now?
I've just been to the hospital. The doctor said that her loss of memory can be cured by a simple operation. 1 week's time, and she'll forget all that happened since the accident in Marseille.
Forget?
Yes. Forget all the evil of Emil Satan and the murder of Henri Paget.
And me?
Yes.
Now, what are you talking to me for?
Because technically, Marlowe is in your custody. The doctor requires your consent before he can operate.
Why should I give it?
Because you love her, and you know I love her, and... because you know the evil has to be wiped away and she has to go back to what she once was.
Okay, Dawson, she's yours.
Thank you, Jordan, for my life again.
So she'll forget it all in a week. I wonder if I'll ever forget it.
For the finest in tomato flavor, enjoy the whole family of Del Monte tomato products.
Del Monte ketchup and chili sauce.
Del Monte tomato sauce and canned tomatoes.
And Del Monte tomato juice.
Remember, buy wisely. Buy for flavor. Buy Del Monte. Del Monte, the brand you trust for flavor in so many good foods. Rocky Jordan, written tonight by Gomer Cool and Larry Roman from a story by E. Jack Newman, stars Jack Moyles in the title role with Jay Novello as Sam Sabaya. Rocky Jordan is produced and directed by Cliff Howell, with original music composed and conducted by Richard Arant. Remember, you have a date next week at the Cafe Tambourine, run by Rocky Jordan. Same time, same station. And the story is A Stranger to the Desert. If it's a gay summer dessert you want, serve Del Monte Fruit Cocktail. Ready diced, ready mixed, a real flavor treat. It's so easy, it's so good, it's so good looking. Ask for Del Monte Fruit Cocktail, the brand that always puts flavor first. Larry Thor speaking. Rocky Jordan is presented over CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Mid-Valley Mutation.